This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Three CNN journalists have resigned in the wake of a retracted news story about links between a Trump advisor and Russian business interests. Earlier this week, CNN ran a story about a congressional investigation into Anthony Scaramucci, which quickly came under question before the network pulled it. President Trump has declared the U.S. media the enemy of the people, and many journalists have taken the charge seriously and pushed back, delivering in-depth coverage of the inner workings of the White House and covering the hearings on the Trump administration's links to Russia. But is it enough? In a recent column for the WashingtonPost.com, publisher and editor of The Nation magazine, Katrina VandenHeuvel, wrote, "The mainstream media's prevailing focus on palace intrigue and White House scandals has come at the expense of substantive policy coverage." In addition to her work with The Nation magazine, Katrina VandenHeuvel is a widely respected commentator and expert. She's won numerous awards and sits on the boards of a number of progressive organizations. She's also the author of The Change I Believe in, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama, Meltdown, How Greed and Corruption Shattered Our Financial System and How We Can Recover, and the co-editor of Taking Back America and Taking Down the Radical Right. Welcome to the program, Katrina.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about what exactly it is that you think the media has gotten right. Because on the surface, it seems as though there is a strongly adversarial relationship between the media and the White House, which is kind of as it should be, right?
Absolutely. I mean, The Nation's been around 152 years, and the idea that the media should be stenographers to power, the idea that access journalism is what journalism is about at its best, is, in our view, all wrong. Adversarial relationship with those in power is important. What I think has happened, though, is that the kind of fixation on the palace intrigue, as I mentioned, and the White House scandals has narrowed a focus when we need to look at the substantive policy issues, which are often not given the attention they deserve, and which allow a Republican Party, as we see with healthcare, to try and ram through hugely unpopular policies. This goes back, Sonali, to the campaign. It's kind of shocking if your listeners go back and look at some of the numbers. 30%, nightly news covered substance issues, gave 30 minutes in total through the campaign year. It was about email servers, it was about Access Hollywood. There was no question raised about climate change in the debates or really on the campaign trail. So all I'm saying is that the media needs to step back, yes, be adversarial, but also don't ignore some of the larger forces shaping our politics, distorting, deforming our politics, whether it's the rollback of climate change or the healthcare bill we're seeing hammered out. And I think the growing media attention to the healthcare bill, which came only in the last week or so, and it was hard because Mitch McConnell wanted to keep it stealth and ram it through. But once there was media attention, I think you saw people realize what was at stake in their own lives. So that's what I think we need to think hard about.
Are there some outlets that are doing better than others? I brought up CNN and this story. You know, just on Sunday, I was at the Los Angeles Press Club Awards and Jake Tapper was being honored. And his speech was all about making sure the media has its integrity. And in the era of being accused of producing fake news, it was more important than ever that the mainstream media fact check, get the story right, and then a day later, CNN is in a world of embarrassment over which three journalists had to resign.
No, I think there's been some fine journalism. I guess I also seek a journalism. I'm on the Hillman Media Foundation board. We give awards to deeply investigative series and also reporting focusing on economic justice issues, on predatory behavior of corporations, on criminal justice abuses. I think the focus on Trump is of course needed, though I think the hyper coverage of his tweets deforms and distracts journalism sometimes. But what I'm saying is there's a broader palette of coverage, a kind of coverage that will look at the, for example, the experiences of millions of people in communities around this country. Or take, for example, the belief at the nation that social movements make transformative change. It took Democracy Now!, The Nation came in, and other outlets to give attention to Standing Rock last year. Our coverage, multi-series investigation on abuses in private prisons led the Department of Justice before Trump to announce last August it was shutting down federal private prisons. I believe in a journalism that has impact, that can change the conditions of people's lives, right wrongs, expose abuses. And I think the focus on Trump is, of course, needed, but in that focus is too often lost, again, the broader issues that define a society. Trump is not an aberration. This country was in crisis before Trump was elected. He was elected because this country was in crisis. And part of that was the wilding we saw with the financial crisis, lives and houses and all looted. And then you see a Republican Party committed to a kind of set of policies that will ravage lives in this country. So I think we need to not treat Trump as an aberration, but continue a focus on the larger trends, dark money, voter suppression, which our correspondent Ari Berman described as the most underreported scandal of the campaign of 2016. These are larger forces in our political culture and economy that demand attention.
Katrina, how much of how the media is covering this White House has to do with President Trump not being very presidential? That if he were basically establishment Republican who had the exact same policies that Trump has, didn't, you know, tweet like a crazy person, just was, quote, more presidential in a way that, you know, Obama and even to an extent George W. Bush compared to Trump was, that they might not have this adversarial relationship and they might actually just fall over and get in line like they've done before.
Well, let me step back. I wrote two or three columns during the campaign, also called Media Malpractice. And I focused, Sonali, on something systemic in our media world, which is dangerous and feeds the Trump phenomenon, which is the quest for ratings. Don't forget, during the campaign, the media didn't elect Trump. I mean, I'm talking cable TV primarily, but it abetted his rise. You remember the just hours of coverage, even of an empty podium, waiting for Trump to come, where he then flogged his steak franchise. But it was, the coverage was good for CNN, as Jeff Zucker, Leslie Moonves of CBS acknowledged. It might not have been good for the country, Leslie Moonves said, but it was great for CBS's stock, the ratings. And in the quest for ratings, I think we see a problem that is not new to these times, but is growing, which is often the obliteration of the line between news, entertainment, what is news, what is scandal. Trump feeds that beast. So he is a president who is a disruptor, and he has upended norms in dangerous ways, and he is not tethered to a traditional Republican Party, though he is essentially a shameless plutocrat, a sham populist, after all the talk and rhetoric. But he is feeding the systemic problems media has been experiencing for a decade or more, the conglomeratization, the entertainmentization, the Murdochization. I wrote a column a few weeks ago called The Other War on the Media, because part of the problem, I think, is not just the danger of Trump calling media enemy of the people, which all media should come together in solidarity to say, no, that is not, you know, that is not the case, fight that. But you have, for example, at the FCC, a Trump appointee who is rolling back net neutrality, essentially internet democracy, rolling back regulations on cross-ownership of media. These are changes, systemic changes, that will define how millions of people get their news, and it will lead to more conglomeratization, more homogenization, and I would submit more right-wingization at a time when I believe the mainstream values in this country are progressive ones, suppressed often by the forces of money, and now media money at stake.
So the funding model of media has so much to do, as you were saying, with how the media finds itself within the dynamics of American politics. It's an advertising-based, profit-based corporate model, which ultimately, even if the rank-and-file journalists are doing very important work and doing a good job, the shareholders and the managers and editors, the people at the top of these media outlets, in a way, share the same agenda as Republican establishment and wanting corporate supremacy of our country.
I think one of the problems, many years ago, 1996, The Nation did its first centerfold on the national entertainment state, and it showed four octopi. And it showed that news organizations, the news within these major corporations, was a tiny outlet, tiny. And these corporations have business in Washington. Business before the regulatory agencies. Now, there is good journalism going on. And as you know, Sonali, there are new models of funding. They may not be at the scale demanded for a new media infrastructure. But I don't want to be reductionist and argue that the funding model is creating lousy journalism. That's not the case. I'm simply saying that there's often a kind of policing of the parameters of what's possible. There's a kind of downsized politics and media of excluded alternatives. I think of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Put aside the man, but the phenomenon. The media gatekeepers gave barely any attention at a time when Sanders' rallies were just as large as Donald Trump's. They were feeding the Trump rally. They were ignoring the Bernie Sanders rally. But you could see that organized people, alternative media, independent media, allowed people to say, no, we're not going to take what's on offer from corporate media. We're going to seek our own way. We're going to listen to what we want to listen to. And that shows that there is the power of a countervailing media, of an alternative media. Now, the funding mechanisms, if they were broader and deeper, would jumpstart an alternative independent media in important ways. We did a special issue about 2 months ago arguing for the need for a new infrastructure of funding for independent progressive media. And we are at work in other groups are as well. But I think until we see that, there's no question that even with the good reporting on Trump, which by the way is fueled by leaks, which I support, I think much of what we've learned in our country's history from the Pentagon Papers to Abu Ghraib to expanded drone strikes has come as a result of leaks. So the suppression of leaks is a dangerous possibility, and Trump and his administration may well turn to that, which we need to be careful about. And there's a solidarity of journalists and journalism that should be fighting against any suppression, any use of the Espionage Act against journalists, which I fear President Obama and his administration began to tee up. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. And I don't want to sound, critical of all. I'm not. I think you call out the good journalism. You call out, as you did at the beginning, Sonali, the importance that a journalism that used to be less interested in adversarial journalism has found the value of it. Let it broaden. Let it move beyond the palace intrigues and scandals, corruption, and incompetence and arrogance of this Trump administration into other areas of our life, which would, I think, be a very good thing.
Katrina, what are the issues that are at stake when the media doesn't do an effective enough job? You talked about healthcare, which only in recent days, particularly with the Congressional Budget Office's estimates of how many people would lose health insurance, we are getting some media coverage of it. But what about other issues? I'm thinking of climate change. I'm thinking of the war on Syria, where we need to see the media do so much better.
I think war is vital to think hard about. I mean, when Trump launched strikes against Syria for alleged use of chemical weapons, you noted that much of the mainstream media, which has been very critical of Trump, suddenly applauded him. And I think we have a kind of fetish for military action as a response to political crises when alternatives haven't been exhausted. I'm sick, Sonali, of turning on cable TV or TV and seeing those generals who are brought on to discuss options vis-a-vis Syria or Yemen or Qatar. Where is a full range of people in this country, veterans, people who seek peace and justice? Okay, get a military person, but it's often the military which defines a framework of coverage of U.S. military action. I mean, I think we need to ramp up coverage of America's engagement in the world. The idea that we have, I think it's 830 bases ringing the world, and the policing of the world, which was an issue in the campaign barely, shows how much more work we need to do to really cover war and military action in a different way. I think this country, I don't think this country is anti-war. I think it's weary of war without end. You know, and I think that's where coverage could play a major role in exposing what the U.S. is doing in the world.
Finally, Katrina, say that the mainstream media did do its job better and fulfill all of those standards that you would like for it to fulfill. We still have millions of people in this country who are taking their direction directly from Trump and his Twitter feed and would dismiss any and everything that the New York Times or Washington Post or CNN said as fake news. How does the mainstream media combat that?
I think the media, I mean, and I, you know, there's independent media, there's corporate media, there's mainstream media, call it what you will, but at its core, fundamentally, media's role is to do rigorous, tough, fearless journalism, call it as it is. And I think that you can, for example, go into a community and cover how the opioid crisis is ravaging a community and what the healthcare bill, if it's ever passed, let's hope it's not, it's health denial bill, how it would strip people of what they need to confront the opioid crisis, how it may kill a son, a daughter, a father. I think media needs to connect more to covering the lived experiences of people. There is often, I think media needs to be more humble. There is an arrogance sometimes about we know what's right. But I think in doing the work that there is a way forward and will combat some of what you're saying. There's always been a right-wing media. There's always been a kind of propagandistic media. Fox has been on our landscape for a long time. Before that, you had the kind of Rush Limbaughs of another decade, Father Coughlin in the Roosevelt era. You had media barons owning newspapers, which, you know, spread propaganda or false news about military dangers. So it's not new. The platforms are new. The speed of distribution is new. So there has to be vigilance. The last thing I'd say, it may sound small compared to the challenges we face, media literacy. I think people learning how to be critical-minded consumers of news, tough when people are working real hard and families, but I think that's a basis and something to think about that would help people move forward.
So being able to tell what a trustworthy source is from an untrustworthy source at the very least. And certainly one of the trustworthy sources is The Nation magazine. And my guest, Katrina Vandenhoevel, is its publisher and editor. Katrina, thank you so much for joining us.
Sonali, thank you for having me.
My guest again, Katrina Vandenhoevel. She, in addition to her work with The Nation magazine, she's a columnist for TheWashingtonPost.com and a widely respected commentator and expert. She's won numerous awards and sits on the boards of a number of organizations and is the author of several books, including The Change I Believe in Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.